We have the place to ourselves, I whisper. Let's make out. She grimaces. I don't feel sexy right now, she says. My stomach is flabby and my boobs are engorged and I need a shower so bad, but it hurts too much to try to take one right now. I look down at her chest and pull at the collar on her hospital gown. I peer down her shirt and grin. How long do they stay like this? She laughs and pushes my hand away. Well, how does your mouth feel? I ask her. She looks at me like she doesn't understand my question, so I elaborate. I'm just wondering if your mouth hurts like the rest of you hurts, because if it doesn't, I want to kiss you. She grins. My mouth feels great. I rise up on my elbow so she doesn't have to roll toward me. I look down on her, and seeing her beneath me feels different now. It feels real. Until yesterday, it really did feel like we had been playing house. Of course, our love is real and our relationship is real, but until I witnessed her give life to my son yesterday, everything I felt before that moment was like child's play compared to what I feel for her now. I love you, Rachel, more than I loved you yesterday. Her eyes are looking up at me like she knows exactly what I'm talking about. If you love me more today than you loved me yesterday, then I can't wait for tomorrow, she says. My lips fall to hers and I kiss her, not because I should, but because I need to. I'm standing outside Rachel's hospital room. She and Clayton are both in the room napping. The nurse said he hardly even cried. I'm sure she tells all the parents that, but I believe her anyway. I take out my phone to text Ian. Me. He got snipped a few hours ago. Took it like a champ. Ian. Ouch. I'm coming to meet him tonight. I'll be there after 7. Me. See you then. My father is walking toward me with 2 coffees in his hands, so I slide my phone into my back pocket. He hands me one of the coffees. He looks like you, he says. He's trying to accept it. Well, I look just like you, I say. Cheers to strong genes. I hold my coffee up and my dad bumps his against it, smiling. He's trying. He leans against the wall for support and looks down at his coffee. He wants to say something, but it's hard for him. What is it? I ask, giving him the opening he needs. He lifts his eyes from their focus on the coffee and he meets my gaze. I'm proud of you, he says with sincerity. It's a simple statement. 4 words. 4 of the most impactful words I've ever heard. Of course, it's not what I wanted for you. No one wants to see his son become a dad at the age of 18, but I'm proud of you for how you handled it, for how you've treated Rachel. He smiles. You made the best of a difficult situation, and that's honestly more than most adults would do. I smile. I tell him thank you. I think the conversation is over, but it's not. Miles, he says, wanting to add more. About Lisa and your mom. I hold my hand up to stop him. I don't want to have this conversation today. I don't want this day to become his defense for what he did to my mother. It's fine, Dad. We'll discuss it another time. He tells me no. He says he needs to discuss it with me now. He tells me it's important. I want to tell him it's not important. I want to tell him Clayton is important. I want to focus on Clayton and Rachel and forget all about the fact that my father is human and makes awful choices like the rest of us. But I don't say any of that. I listen. Because he's my father.
Chapter 29. Tate. Miles. What are you doing? Me. Homework. Miles. Feel like taking a swim break? Me. Question mark? It's February. Miles. The rooftop pool is heated. It doesn't close for another hour. I stare at the text, then immediately look up at Corbin. There's a rooftop pool here? Corbin nods his head but doesn't look away from the TV. Yep. I sit up straight. Are you kidding me? I've lived here this long, and you fail to tell me there's a heated rooftop pool. He faces me now and shrugs. I hate pools. Ugh, I could slap him. Me. Corbin never mentioned there was a pool. Let me change and I'll head over there. Miles. Smiley face. I realize I forgot to knock as soon as I closed the door to his apartment. I always knock. I guess my mentioning in a text that I was coming over after I changed seemed good enough to me. But the way Miles is staring at me from the doorway of his bedroom makes me think he doesn't like the fact that I didn't knock. I pause in his living room and look at him, waiting to see what mood he's in today.
You're in a bikini, he says pointedly.
I look down at my attire. And shorts, I say defensively. I look back up at him. What are people supposed to wear when they swim in February? He's still standing frozen in his doorway, staring at my attire. I fold my towel across my arms and over my stomach. I suddenly feel extremely awkward and underdressed. He shakes his head and finally begins moving toward me. He's still staring at my bikini.
I hope no one is up there, because if you're wearing that bikini, these swim shorts are going to be really embarrassing.
He looks down at his shorts, at the obvious bulge in them. I laugh. So he actually likes the bikini. He takes another step forward and slides his hands around to the back of my shorts, then pulls me against him.
I changed my mind, he says with a grin. I want to stay here.
I immediately shake my head. I'm going swimming, I say. You can stay here if you want, but you'll be alone. He kisses me, then backs me toward his apartment door.
Then I guess I'm going swimming, he says.
Miles enters the passcode for rooftop access, then opens the door for me. I'm relieved to see that no one else is out here, and I am taken by how breathtakingly beautiful it is. It's an infinity pool overlooking the city, and it's lined with patio chairs all the way to the opposite end, where it's capped off with an attached hot tub. I can't believe neither of you thought to mention this before now, I say. All these months, and I've been missing out. Miles takes my towel and lays it on one of the tables surrounding the pool. He walks back over to me and drops his hands to the button on my shorts.
This is actually the first time I've ever been out here.
He unzips my shorts and pushes them over my hips. His lips are close to mine and his expression is playful.
Come on, he whispers. Let's get wet.
I kick off the shorts at the same time as he takes off his shirt. The air is incredibly cold, but the steam rising from the water is promising. I walk to the shallow end to descend the steps, but Miles dives headfirst into the deep end of the pool. I step in, and my feet are swallowed up in the warmth of the water, so I quickly step in the rest of the way. I make my way toward the middle of the pool and walk to the edge, then rest my arms on the concrete ledge, looking out over the city. Miles swims up behind me and cages me in by pressing his chest against my back and placing his hands on either side of the ledge. He rests his head against mine as we both take in the view. It's beautiful, I whisper. He's quiet. We watch the city in silence for what seems like forever. Every now and then, he'll cup his hands and bring water up to my shoulders to warm my chills away. Have you always lived in San Francisco? I ask him. I turn so that my back is against the ledge now and I'm facing him. He keeps his arms on either side of me and nods.
Close to it, he says, still looking at the city over my shoulder.
I want to ask him where, but I don't. I can tell by his body language that he doesn't want to talk about himself.
He never wants to talk about himself.
Are you an only child? I ask, trying to see what I can get away with. Any brothers or sisters? He looks me in the eyes now. His lips are pressed into a firm, agitated line.
What are you doing, Tate?
He doesn't ask it in a rude way, but there's no other way his question can come across. Just making conversation, I say. My voice is soft and sounds offended.
I can think of a lot more things I'd rather talk about than myself. But that's all I want to know about, Miles. I nod, understanding that although I'm technically not breaking his rules, I'm bending them. He doesn't feel comfortable with that. I turn around and face the ledge again. He's still in the same position pressed against me, but it's different now. He's stiff, guarded, defensive. I don't know anything about him. I don't know a single thing about his family, and he's already met mine. I don't know a single thing about his past, but he's slept in my childhood bed. I don't know what subjects I bring up or what actions I take that will cause him to close off. But I've got nothing to hide from him. He sees me for exactly who I am. I don't see him at all. I quickly bring a hand up and wipe away a tear that somehow just escaped down my cheek. The absolute last thing I want is for him to see me cry. As much as I know I'm too far gone to continue treating this as casual sex, I'm also too far gone to stop it. I'm terrified to lose him for good. So I sell myself short and take what I can from him, even though I know I deserve better. Miles places a hand on my shoulder and turns me around to face him. When I choose to stare down at the water instead, he hooks a finger under my chin and makes me look up at him. I allow him to tilt my face up to his, but I don't make eye contact. I look up and to the right, attempting to blink back the tears. I'm sorry. I don't even know what he's apologizing for. I don't even know if he knows what he's apologizing for. But we both know my tears have everything to do with him, so he's more than likely just apologizing for that simple reason alone. Because he knows he's incapable of giving me what I want. He stops making me look at him and instead pulls me to his chest. I rest my ear against his heart, and he rests his chin on top of my head. Do you think we should stop? He asks quietly. His voice is fearful, like he's hoping my answer is no, yet he feels compelled to ask me anyway. No, I whisper. He sighs heavily. It sounds like it could be a sigh of relief, but I'm not sure. If I ask you something, will you be honest with me? I shrug, because there's no way I'm answering that with a yes until I hear his question first. Are you still doing this with me because you think I'll change my mind? Because you think there's a chance I'll fall in love with you? That's the only reason I'm still doing this, Miles. I don't say that out loud, though. I don't say anything. Because I can't. Tate, I just... His voice fades away and he grows quiet. I analyze his words and the fact that he said, I can't, rather than I won't. I want to ask him why he can't. Is he scared? Is it because I'm not right for him? Is he afraid he'll break my heart? I don't ask him because none of his answers to these questions would reassure me. None of these scenarios is reason enough to absolutely deny a heart happiness. Which is why I don't question him. Because I feel like maybe I'm not prepared for the truth. Maybe I'm underestimating whatever it was that happened in his past to make him this way. Because something happened. Something I more than likely couldn't relate to even if I found out what it was. Something that stole the spirit right out of him, just like Cap said. His arms pull me in tighter, and the hold he has on me speaks volumes. It's more than an embrace, more than a hug. He's holding me like he's terrified I'd drown if he were to release me. Tate, he whispers. I know I'll regret saying this, but I want you to hear it. He pulls back just enough for his lips to meet my hair, then grips me tightly again. If I were capable of loving someone, it would be you. My heart cracks with his words, and I feel the hope seep in and leak right back out again. But I'm not capable. So if it's too hard... It's not, I interrupt, doing whatever I can to stop him from ending this. I somehow find it in me to look him in the eyes and tell the best lie I've ever told in my whole life. I like things exactly how they are. He knows I'm lying, I can see the doubt in his concerned eyes, but he nods anyway. I try to get his mind off of it before he sees right through me. I wrap my arms loosely around his neck, but his attention is pulled to the door, which is now opening. I turn, too, and see Cap, slowly shuffling his way onto the rooftop deck. He walks toward the switch on the wall that turns off the jets to the hot tub. He flips it off and slowly turns back toward the door, but not before noticing us out of the corner of his eye. He turns and faces us full on, standing no more than 5 feet away.
"That you, Tate?"
he says, squinting. "It's me," I say, still in the same position with Miles.
"Hmm," Cap says, taking us both in. "Anyone ever told the two of you that you make a pretty darn good-looking couple?"
I wince, because I know this isn't the best moment for Miles to hear that, especially after the awkward conversation we just had. I also know what Cap is up to with that comment.
"We'll shut the lights off when we leave, Cap,"
Miles says, ignoring Cap's question and redirecting the conversation. Cap narrows his eyes at him, shakes his head as though he's disappointed, and begins to turn back to the door.
"It was a rhetorical question anyway," he mumbles.
I see his hand go up to his forehead, and he salutes the air in front of him.
"Good night, Tate," he says loudly.
"Good night, Cap." Miles and I both watch until the door closes behind Cap. I pull my hands away from his neck and gently push against his chest until he steps back in order for me to make my way around him. I swim backward toward the other side of the pool.
"Why are you always so rude to him?" I ask.
Miles lowers himself in the water, parting his arms in front of him and kicking off the wall behind him. He swims toward me, and I watch as his eyes remain focused on mine. I swim backward until my back is against the opposite wall of the pool. He continues toward me, almost crashing into me, but he stops himself by gripping the ledge on both sides of my head, sending waves of water against my chest.
"I'm not rude to him."
His lips meet my neck and he kisses it softly, trailing slowly upward until his mouth is close to my ear.
"I just don't like answering questions."
I think we've established that already. I pull my neck away a few inches in order to see his face. I try to focus on his eyes, but there are drops of water on his lips, and it's hard not to stare. "He's an old man, though. You're not supposed to be rude to old people. And he's pretty damn funny if you'd just get to know him." Miles laughs a little.
"You like him, huh?"
He seems amused. I nod. "Yeah, I like him a lot. Sometimes I like him more than I like you." He laughs loudly this time and leans in again, planting a kiss on my cheek. His hand conforms to the nape of my neck and his eyes drop to my mouth.
"I like that you like him," he says, bringing his eyes up to mine. "I won't be rude to him again. Promise."
I bite my lip so that he doesn't see how much I want to smile at the fact that he just made me a promise. It was a simple promise, but it still feels good. He slides his hand around to my jaw, and his thumb meets my lip. He pulls it away from my teeth.
"What did I tell you about hiding that smile?"
He takes my bottom lip between his teeth and bites it gently, then releases it. It feels as if the temperature in the pool just shot up 20 degrees. His mouth meets my throat, and he breathes out a heavy sigh against my skin. I tilt my head back and let it rest against the ledge of the pool as he kisses his way down my neck.
"I don't want to swim anymore," he says, sliding his lips from the base of my throat all the way up to my mouth again.
"Well, then, what do you want to do?" I whisper weakly.
"You," he says without hesitation. "In my shower. From behind."
I swallow a huge gulp of air and feel it fall all the way to the pit of my stomach.
"Wow. That's very specific."
"And also in my bed," he whispers, "with you on top, still soaking wet from the shower." I inhale sharply, and we both hear the tremble of my breath as I exhale.
Okay,
I try to say, but his mouth is on mine before the word is even all the way out. And once again, what should have been an eye-opening conversation for me is shoved aside to make room for the only thing he's willing to give me.
Chapter 30. Miles. 6 years earlier. We walk quietly to an empty waiting area. My father sits first, and I reluctantly sit across from him. I wait for his confession, but he doesn't know I don't need it. I know about his relationship with Lisa. I know how long it's been going on. Your mother and I. He's looking at the floor. He can't even make eye contact with me. We decided to separate when you were 16. However, with as much as I traveled, it made financial sense for us to wait until you graduated before filing for divorce, so that's what we decided to do. 16. She got sick when I was 16. We had been split up for almost a year when I met Lisa. He's looking at me now. He's being honest. When she found out she was sick, it was the right thing to do, Miles. She was your mother, and I wasn't going to leave her when she needed me the most. My chest hurts. I know you've put two and two together, he says. I know you've done the math. I know you've been hating me, thinking I was having an affair while she was sick, and I hated allowing you to think that. Then why did you? I ask him. Why did you let me think that? He looks at the floor again. I don't know, he says. I thought maybe there was a chance that you didn't realize I'd been dating Lisa for longer than I let on, so I thought bringing it up would do more harm than good. I didn't like the thought of you knowing my marriage with your mother had failed. I didn't want you to think she died unhappy. She didn't, I reassure him. You were there for her dad. We both were. He appreciates that I say this because he knows it's true. My mother was happy with her life, happy with me. It makes me wonder if she'd be disappointed now, seeing how things have turned out. She would be proud of you, Miles, he says to me, with how you've handled yourself. I hug him. I needed to hear that more than I knew.
Chapter 31. Tate. I'm trying to listen to Corbin go on about his conversation with Mom, but all I can think about is the fact that Miles is due home any minute now. It's been 10 days since he's been home, and that's the longest we've gone without seeing each other since the weeks we spent not speaking.
Have you told Miles yet? Corbin asks.
Told him what? Corbin faces me.
That you're moving out.
He points at the potholder on the counter next to me. I toss him the potholder and shake my head. I haven't talked to him since last week. I'll probably tell him tonight. Honestly, I've wanted to tell him I found my own apartment all week, but that would involve either calling or texting him, two things we don't do. The only times we text each other are when we're both home. I think we do this because it helps us maintain our boundaries. It's not like the move is a big deal anyway. I'm only moving a few blocks away. I found an apartment that's closer to both work and school. It's definitely no downtown high-rise, but I love it. I do wonder, though, how it will affect things between Miles and me. I think that's one of the reasons I haven't mentioned that I was even looking for my own place. There's a fear in the back of my mind that not being right across the hall from him will be too inconvenient, and he'll just call off whatever is going on between us. Corbin and I both look up as soon as the apartment door opens, and there's a quick knock on it. I glance at Corbin, and he rolls his eyes. He's still adapting. Miles walks into the kitchen, and I see the smile that wants to spread across his face when he sees me, but he keeps it in check when he sees Corbin.
What are you cooking? Miles asks him.
He leans against the wall and folds his arms across his chest, but his eyes are scrolling up my legs. They pause when he sees I'm wearing a skirt, and then he smiles in my direction. Luckily, Corbin is still facing the stove.
Dinner,
Corbin says with a clipped voice. He takes a while to adapt.
Miles looks at me again and stares for a few silent seconds.
Hey, Tate, he says.
I grin.
Hey.
How were midterms? His eyes are everywhere on me but my face.
Good, I say.
He mouths, you look pretty. I smile and wish more than anything that Corbin wasn't standing here right now, because it's taking all I have not to throw my arms around Miles and kiss the hell out of him.
Corbin knows why Miles is here. Miles and I just try to respect the fact that Corbin still doesn't like what's going on between us, so we keep it behind closed doors. Miles is chewing on the inside of his cheek, fidgeting with his shirt sleeve, watching me. It's quiet in the kitchen, and Corbin still hasn't turned around to acknowledge him. Miles looks like he's about to burst at the seams.
Fuck it,
he says, gliding across the kitchen toward me. He takes my face in his hands and kisses me, hard, in front of Corbin.
He's kissing me, in front of Corbin.
Don't analyze this, Tate. He's pulling my hands, dragging me out of the kitchen. As far as I know, Corbin is still facing the stove, trying his best to ignore us. Still adapting. We get to the living room and Miles separates his mouth from mine.
I haven't been able to think about anything else today, he says. At all.
Me neither. He pulls me by the hand toward the front door. I follow. He opens it, walks to his apartment, and pulls his keys out of his pocket. His luggage is still outside in the hallway.
Why is your luggage out here?
Miles pushes open his apartment door.
I haven't been home yet, he says.
He turns around and grabs his things from the hallway, then holds the door open for me.
You came to my apartment first?
He nods, then tosses his duffel bag onto the couch and pushes his suitcase against the wall.
Yep,
he says. He grabs my hand and pulls me to him.
I told you, Tate. Haven't thought about anything else.
He smiles and lowers his head to kiss me.
I laugh.
Aw, you missed me, I say teasingly. He pulls back. You would think I'd just told him I loved him with the way his body tenses up.
Relax, I say. You're allowed to miss me, Miles. It doesn't break your rules.
He backs up a few steps.
You thirsty?
He asks, changing the subject like he always does. He turns and heads toward the kitchen, but everything about him just changed. His demeanor, his smile, his excitement over finally seeing me after 10 days. I stand in the living room and watch it all crumble. I'm hit by a reality check, but it feels more like a meteor. This man can't even admit that he misses me. I've been holding out hope that if I take it slowly enough with him, he'll eventually break through whatever it is that's holding him back. The entire past few months, I've been under the assumption that maybe he just can't handle the way things have developed between us, and he needs time. But it's clear now. It's not him. It's me. I'm the one who can't handle this thing between us.
You okay?
Miles says from the kitchen. He walks out from behind the obstructed view of the cabinets so he can see me. He waits for me to answer him, but I can't.
Did you miss me, Miles?
And up comes the armor again, shielding him. He looks away and walks back into the kitchen.
We don't say things like that, Tate,
he says. The hardness is back in his voice.
Is he serious?
We don't? I take a few steps toward the kitchen. Miles, it's a common phrase. It doesn't mean commitment. It doesn't even mean love. Friends say it to friends. He leans against the bar in the kitchen and calmly looks up at me.
But we were never friends. And I don't want to break your one and only rule by giving you false hope. So I'm not saying it.
I can't explain what happens to me, because I don't know. But it's as if every single thing he's ever said and done that's hurt me impales me all at once. I want to scream at him. I want to hate him. I want to know what the hell happened that made him capable of saying things that can hurt me more than any other words have ever come close to doing. I'm tired of treading water. I'm tired of pretending it's not killing me to want to know everything about him. I'm tired of pretending he's not everywhere. Everything. My only thing. What did she do to you? I whisper.
Don't,
he says. The word is a warning, a threat. I'm so tired of seeing the pain in his eyes and not knowing the reason for it. I'm tired of not knowing what words are off limits with him. Tell me. He looks away from me.
Go home, Tate.
He turns around and grips the edge of the counter, dropping his head between his shoulders. Fuck you. I turn and exit the kitchen. When I reach the living room, I hear him coming after me, so I speed up. I make it to the front door and open it, but his palm meets the door above my head and he slams it shut. I squeeze my eyes tightly, bracing for whatever words are about to completely slay me, because I know they will. His face is right next to my ear, and his chest is pressed against my back.
That's what we've been doing, Tate. Fucking. I've made that clear from day one.
I laugh, because I don't know what else to do. I turn around and look up at him. He doesn't back away, and he's so much more intimidating in this moment than I've ever seen him be before. You think you made that clear? I ask him. You are so full of shit, Miles. He still doesn't move, but his jaw tenses.
How have I not been clear? Two rules. Can't get any simpler than that.
I laugh incredulously, then get everything off my chest at once. There's a huge difference between fucking someone and making love to them. You haven't fucked me in more than a month. Every time you're inside me, you're making love to me. I can see it in the way you look at me. You miss me when we aren't together. You think about me all the time. You can't even wait 10 seconds to walk in your own front door before coming to see me. So don't you dare try to tell me you've been clear from day one, because you are the murkiest goddamn man I've ever met. I breathe. I breathe for the first time in what feels like a month. He can do what he wants with all that. I'm done trying. He blows out a steady, controlled breath while he backs several steps away from me. He winces and turns around as if he doesn't want me to read the emotions that are obviously present somewhere deep within him. His hands grip the back of his neck tightly, and he remains in this position for a solid minute without moving. He begins to blow out steady breath after steady breath, as if he's doing everything in his power to pull himself together and not cry. My heart begins to ache when I realize what's happening. He's breaking.
Oh, God,
he whispers. His voice is completely pain-ridden.
What am I doing to you, Tate?
He walks to the wall and falls against it, then slides to the floor. His knees come up and he rests his elbows on them, covering his face with his hands to stop his emotions. His shoulders begin to shake. But he's not making a sound. He's crying. Miles Archer is crying. It's the same heart-wrenching cry that came from him the night I met him. This grown man, this wall of intimidation, this solid veil of armor, he's completely crumbling right in front of my eyes. Miles, I whisper. My voice is weak compared with his massive silence. I walk to him and lower myself to my knees in front of him. I wrap my arm around his shoulders and lower my head to his. I don't ask him what's wrong again, because now I'm terrified to know.
Chapter 32, Miles. 6 years earlier. Lisa loves Clayton. My dad loves Clayton. Clayton fixes families. He's already my hero, and he's only 2 days old. Shortly after my dad and Lisa leave, Ian arrives. He says he doesn't want to hold Clayton, but Rachel makes him. He's uncomfortable because he's never held a baby before, but he holds him. Thank God he looks like Rachel, Ian says. I agree with him. Ian asks Rachel if I ever told her what I said to him after I met her. I don't know what he's talking about. Ian laughs. After he walked you to class that first day, he took a picture of you from his seat, Ian tells her. He texted it to me and said, "She's gonna have all my babies." Rachel looks at me. I shrug. I'm embarrassed. Rachel loves that I said that to Ian. I love that Ian told her that. The doctor comes in and tells us we can go home now. Ian helps me take everything to the car and pull it up to the exit. Before I go back to Rachel's room, Ian touches my shoulder. I turn around and face him. I get the feeling he wants to tell me congratulations, but instead he just hugs me. It's awkward, but it's not. I like that he's proud of me. It makes me feel good, like I'm doing this right. Ian leaves. So do we. Me, Rachel, and Clayton. My family. I want Rachel to sit in the front with me, but I love that she's riding in the back with him. I love how much she loves him. I love that I'm attracted to her even more now that she's a mom. I want to kiss her. I want to tell her I love her again, but I think I tell her way too much. I don't ever want her to get tired of hearing it. "Thank you for this baby," she says from the back seat. "He's beautiful." I laugh. "You're responsible for the beautiful part, Rachel. The only thing he got from me was his balls." She laughs. She laughs hard. "Oh my God, I know," she says. "They're so big." We both laugh at our son's big balls. She sighs. "Rest," I tell her. "You haven't slept in 2 days." I see her smile in the rearview mirror. "But I can't stop staring at him," she whispers. "I can't stop staring at you, Rachel." But I do stop because the oncoming traffic is brighter than it should be. My hands grip the steering wheel. Too bright. I've always heard your life flashes before your eyes and the moments before you die. In a sense, that's true. However, it doesn't come at you in sequence or even in random order. It's just one picture that sticks in your head and becomes everything you feel and everything you see. It's not your actual life that flashes before your eyes. What flashes before your eyes are the people who are your life, Rachel and Clayton. All I see is the two of them, my whole life, flash before my eyes. The sound becomes everything. Everything. Inside me, outside me, through me, under me, over me. Rachel. 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 I can't find her. Clayton. 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 I'm wet. It's cold. My head hurts. My arms hurt. I can't see her. I can't see her. I can't see her. I can't see him. Silence. 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 Deafening silence. Miles. I open my eyes. It's wet. It's wet. There's water. It's wet. Water is in the car. I unbuckle my seatbelt and turn around. Her hands are on his car seat. Miles, help me. It's stuck. I try. I try again, but she needs to get out too. She needs to get out too. I kick my window and break the glass. I saw it in a movie once. Make sure there's a way out before there's too much pressure on the windows. Rachel, get out. I've got him. She tells me no. She won't stop trying to get him out. I'll get him, Rachel. She can't get out. Her seatbelt is stuck. It's too tight. I let go of the car seat and reach for her seatbelt. My hands are underwater when I find it. She slaps at my arms and attempts to push me away from her. Get him first, she screams. Get him out first. I can't. They're both stuck. You're stuck, Rachel. Oh, God. I'm scared. Rachel is scared. The water is everywhere. I can't see him anymore. I can't see her. I can't hear him. I reach for her seatbelt again. I get it off her. I grab her hands. Her window isn't broken. Mine is. I pull her forward. She's fighting me. She's fighting me. She stops fighting me. Fight me, Rachel. Fight me. Move. Someone is reaching in through my window. Give me her hand, I hear him yell. The water is coming in through my window now. The entire back seat is water. Everything is water. I give him Rachel's hand. He helps me get her out. Everything is water. I try to find him. I can't breathe. I try to find him. I can't breathe. I try to save him. I want to be his hero. I can't breathe. So I just stop. Silence. 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 Deafening scream. I cover my ears with my hands. I cover my heart with armor. I cough until I can breathe again. I open my eyes. We're in a boat. I look around. We're on a lake. I bring my hand up to my jaw. My hand is red. Covered in blood as red as Rachel's hair. Rachel. I find Rachel. Clayton. I don't find Clayton. I push up on my hands and move to the edge of the boat. I need to find him. Someone stops me. Someone pulls me back. Someone won't let me. Someone is telling me it's too late. Someone tells me he's sorry. Someone tells me we can't get to him. Someone tells me we went over the bridge after the impact. Someone tells me he's so sorry. I move to Rachel instead. I try to hold her, but she won't let me. She's screaming, sobbing, crying, wailing. She hits me. She kicks me. She says I should have saved him instead. But I tried to save you both, Rachel. You should have saved him, Miles, she cries. You should have saved him. You should have saved him. I should have saved him. She's screaming, sobbing, crying, wailing. I hold her anyway. I let her hit me. I let her hate me. Rachel hates me. I hold her anyway. Rachel cries, but she's quiet. She's crying so hard her throat can't even make a sound. Her body is crying, but her voice is not. Ruined. 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 I cry with her. I cry and I cry and I cry and I cry and we cry and we cry and we cry. Ruined. The water is everything now. I look at Rachel. I only see water. I close my eyes. I only see water. I look up at the sky. I only see water. It hurts so much. I never knew a heart could hold the weight of the entire world. I don't make Rachel's life better anymore. I ruined you, Rachel. My family. Me and you and Clayton. Ruined. You can't love me after this, Rachel.
Chapter 33. Tate. My hands are on him, rubbing his back, touching his hair. He's crying, and the only thing I can do is tell him, never mind. I want to tell him to forget everything I said tonight. I want to do whatever I can to take this pain away from him, because whatever happened shouldn't matter. Whatever happened, no one deserves to feel the way he's feeling right now. I move his arms from his face, then slide onto his lap. I hold his face in my hands and tilt it to mine. He keeps his eyes closed. I don't have to know, Miles. His arms wrap around my back and he buries his face against my chest. His labored breaths come faster as he tries to push back his emotions. My arms are wrapped around his head, and I kiss his hair, then trail kisses down the side of his head until he pulls back and looks up at me. No amount of armor in the world, and no wall, no matter how thick, could hide the devastation in his eyes right now. It's so prominent, and there's so much of it, I have to hold my breath so I don't cry with him. What happened to you, Miles? I don't have to know, I whisper again, shaking my head. His hands move to the back of my head and he presses his mouth to mine, hard and painfully. He moves forward until my back is against the floor. His hands pull at my shirt, and he's kissing me desperately, furiously, filling my mouth with the taste of his tears. I let him use me to get rid of his pain. I'll do whatever he wants me to do as long as he stops hurting like he's hurting. He slips his hand beneath my skirt and begins to pull down my underwear at the same time as I hook my thumbs onto the hips of his jeans and push them down. My panties make it to my ankles, and I kick them off, just as he takes both my hands and pushes them above my head, pressing them to the floor. He drops his forehead to mine but doesn't kiss me. He closes his eyes, but I keep mine open. He wastes no time pushing himself between my legs, spreading them wider. He moves his forehead to the side of my head, then slides into me, slowly. When he's all the way inside, he exhales, releasing some of his pain, taking his mind away from whatever horror he just went through. He pulls out, then thrusts inside me again, this time with all his strength. It hurts. Give me your pain, Miles.
My God, Rachel,
he whispers.
My God, Rachel. Rachel, Rachel.
Rachel, that word gets put on repeat inside my head.
My God, Rachel.
I turn my head away from his. It's the worst pain I've ever felt. The absolute worst. His body immediately stills inside mine when he realizes what he said. The only thing moving between us right now are the tears falling from my eyes.
Tate, he whispers, shattering the silence between us. Tate, I'm so sorry.
I shake my head, but the tears won't stop. Somewhere deep inside me, I feel something harden. Something that was once liquid completely freezes. And it's in this moment that I know this is it. That name. It said it all. I'll never have his past because she has it. I'll never have his future because he refuses to give it to anyone who isn't her. And I'll never know why. Because he'll never tell me. He begins to pull out of me, but I tighten my legs around his. He sighs heavily against my cheek.
I swear to God, Tate, I wasn't thinking about—
Stop, I whisper. I don't want to hear him defend what just happened.
Just finish, Miles.
He lifts his head and looks down at me. I see the apology, clear as day, hiding behind fresh tears. I don't know if it's my words that have just cut him again, or the fact that we both know this is it. But it looks like his heart just broke again. If that's even possible. A tear falls from his eyes and lands on my cheek. I feel it roll down and combine with one of my own.
I just want this to be over.
I wrap my hand around the back of his head and pull his mouth to mine. He's not moving inside me anymore, so I arch my back, pressing my hips harder against him. He moans in my mouth and moves against me once, then stops again.
Tate, he says against my lips. Just finish, Miles, I say to him through my tears. Just finish.
He places a palm against my cheek and he presses his lips to my ear. We're both crying harder now, and I can see that I'm more than this to him. I know I am. I feel how much he wants to love me. But whatever is stopping him is more than I'm able to conquer. I wrap my arms around his neck.
Please, I beg him, please, Miles.
I'm crying, begging for something, but I don't even know what it is anymore. He thrusts against me, hard this time, so hard I scoot away from him. So he wraps his arms under my shoulders and cups his hands upward, holding me in place against him as he repeatedly pushes into me. Hard, long, deep thrusts that force moans out of both of us with every movement.
Harder,
I beg. He pushes harder. Faster. He moves faster. We're both gasping for breath between our tears. It's intense. It's heartbreaking. It's devastating. It's ugly. It's over. As soon as his body is motionless on top of mine, I push against his shoulders. He rolls off of me. I sit up and wipe my eyes with my hands, then stand up and pull on my underwear. His fingers wrap around my ankle. The same fingers that wrapped around the same ankle the first night I met him.
"Tate,"
he says, his voice riddled with everything. Every single emotion wraps itself around each letter of my name as it comes out of his mouth. I pull away from his grasp. I walk to the door, still feeling him inside me, still tasting his mouth on mine, still feeling the stains of his tears against my cheek. I open the door and walk out. I close the door behind me, and it's the hardest thing I've ever done. I can't even walk the 3 feet back to my apartment. I collapse in the hallway. I'm liquid. Nothing but tears.
Chapter 34. Miles. 6 years earlier. We went home, not to our home. Rachel wanted Lisa. Rachel needs her mother. I kind of need my father. Every night I hold her. Every night I tell her I'm sorry. Every night we just cry. I don't understand how it can be so perfect, how life and love and people can be so perfect and beautiful. Then it's not. It's so ugly. Life and love and people become ugly. It all becomes water. Tonight is different. This night is the first night in 3 weeks when she's not crying. I hold her anyway. I want to be happy that she's not crying, but it scares me. Her tears mean she feels something. Even if that something is devastation, it's still something. There aren't any tears tonight. I hold her anyway. I tell her I'm sorry again. She never tells me it's okay. She never tells me it's not my fault. She never tells me she forgives me. She does kiss me tonight, though. She kisses me and takes off her shirt. She tells me to make love to her. I tell her we shouldn't. I tell her we're supposed to wait 2 more weeks. She kisses me, so I'll stop talking. I kiss her back. Rachel loves me again, I think. She's kissing me like she loves me. I'm gentle with her. I go slow. She's touching my skin like she loves me. I don't want to hurt her. She cries. Please don't cry, Rachel. I stop. She tells me not to stop. She tells me to finish. Finish. I don't like that word, like this is a job. I kiss her again. I finish. Miles. Rachel wrote me a letter. I'm sorry. No. I can't do this. It hurts too much. No, no, no. My mother is taking me back to Phoenix. We're both staying there. It's all too complicated, even between the two of them now. Your father already knows. Clayton brings families together. Miles rips them apart. I tried to stay. I tried to love you. Every time I look at you, I see him. Everything is him. If I stay, everything will always be him. You know that. I know you understand that. I shouldn't blame you. But you do. I'm so sorry. You stopped loving me with a letter, Rachel. Love, I feel it, all the ugly parts of it. It's in my pores, my veins, my memories, my future. Rachel. The difference between the ugly side of love and the beautiful side of love is that the beautiful side is much lighter. It makes you feel like you're floating. It lifts you up, carries you. The beautiful parts of love hold you above the rest of the world. They hold you so high above all the bad stuff, and you just look down on everything else and think, wow, I'm so glad I'm up here. Sometimes the beautiful parts of love move back to Phoenix. The ugly parts of love are too heavy to move back to Phoenix. The ugly parts of love can't lift you up. They bring you down. They hold you under, drown you. You look up and think, I wish I was up there. But you're not. Ugly love becomes you, consumes you, makes you hate it all. Makes you realize that all the beautiful parts aren't even worth it. Without the beautiful, you'll never risk feeling this. You'll never risk feeling the ugly. So you give it up. You give it all up. You never want love again, no matter what kind it is, because no type of love will ever be worth living through the ugly love again. I'll never let myself love anyone again, Rachel. Ever.
Chapter 35. Tate.
Last load, Corbin says, picking up the remaining two boxes. I hand Corbin the key to my new place.
I'll make one more walkthrough and meet you over there. I open the door for Corbin and he exits the apartment. I'm left staring at the door across the hall. I haven't seen or spoken to him since last week. I've been selfishly hoping he would show up and apologize, but then again, what would he even be apologizing for? He never lied to me. He never verbalized promises that he broke. The only times he wasn't brutally honest with me were the times he didn't speak. The times he looked at me and I assumed the feelings I saw in his eyes were more than what he was able to verbalize. It's apparent now that I more than likely invented those feelings from him in order to match them to my own. The occasional emotion behind his eyes when we were together was obviously a figment of my own imagination. A figment of my hope. I scan the apartment one last time to make sure I packed everything. When I step outside and lock Corbin's door behind me, my movements are taken over by something I'm unfamiliar with. I can't tell if it's braveness or desperation, but my hand is balled into a fist, and that fist is knocking on his door. I tell myself that I'm free to escape to the elevator if 10 seconds pass and the door doesn't open. Unfortunately, it opens after 7. My thoughts begin to riot with rationalization as the door opens wider. Before rationalization wins and I dart away, Ian appears in the doorway. His eyes change from complacent to sympathetic when he sees me standing here. "Tate," he says, capping my name off with a smile. I notice the shift of his gaze toward Miles' bedroom before his eyes fall back on mine.
"Let me get him," he says.
I feel the ascent in the nod of my head, but my heart is making a descent, scaling down my chest, through my stomach, and straight to the floor.
"Tate's at the door," I hear Ian say.
I inspect every word, every syllable, searching for a clue wherever I can find one. I want to know if he rolled his eyes when he said that, or if he said it hopefully. If anyone knows how Miles would feel about me standing in his doorway, it would be Ian. Unfortunately, Ian's voice gives no indication of what Miles may feel about my presence. I hear footsteps. I dissect the sound of the footsteps as they close in on the living room. Are they hurried footsteps? Are they hesitant? Are they angry? When he reaches the door, my eyes fall to his feet first. I get nothing from them. No clues that will help me find the confidence I so desperately need in this moment. I can already tell my words will come out raspy and weak, but I force them up anyway. "I'm leaving," I say, still staring down at his feet. "I just wanted to say goodbye." There's no immediate reaction from him, physically or verbally. My eyes finally make the brave journey up to his. When I see the stoic look on his face, I want to step back. But I'm afraid I'll trip over my heart. I don't want him to watch me fall. My regret over making the choice to knock consumes me with the brevity in his response.
"Goodbye, Tate."
Chapter 36. Miles. Present day. Her eyes finally find the courage to meet mine, but I try not to see her. When I really look at her, it's too much. Every time I'm with her, her eyes and her mouth and her voice and her smile find every vulnerable spot on me to breach, to seize, to conquer. Every time I'm around her, I have to fight it, so I try not to see her with anything other than my eyes this time. She says she's here to say goodbye, but that's not why she's here, and she knows it. She's here because she fell in love with me, even though I told her not to. She's here because she still has hope that I can love her back. I want to, Tate. I want to love you so much it fucking hurts. I don't even recognize my own voice when I tell her goodbye. The lack of emotion behind my words can be misconstrued as hateful. A far cry from the apathy I'm attempting to convey, and an even farther cry from the urge I have to beg her not to go. She immediately looks down at her feet. I could tell my response just killed her, but I've given her enough false hope. Every time I ever allowed her in, it hurts her that much more when I have to push her away. But it's hard to feel bad for her, because as much as she's hurting, she doesn't know pain. She doesn't know it like I know it. I keep pain alive. I keep it in business. I keep it thriving with as much as I experience it. She inhales and then looks back up at me with slightly redder, glossier eyes. You deserve so much more than what you're allowing yourself to have. She stands on the tip of her toes and places her hands on my shoulders, then presses her lips to my cheek. Goodbye, Miles. She turns and walks toward the elevator just as Corbin steps out to meet her. I see her lift one of her hands to